This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on, brother?
Oh, man, same old, same old. Been, reinvigorated somewhat. Went to PWG last night and had a good time. Other than that, I mean, just watching wrestling. I don't know if it's been a slow week last week with new stuff, or I was just busy because I did those WXW podcasts with Quentin and Brock that actually just recently came out. But that took up a lot of my time and attention, so I was not able to really pay attention to anything else. How you been, though, Pete?
Well, good. I mean, Daniel Bryan getting reinstated. I mean, you heard that. I mean,
that's the biggest. Yeah, obviously, that's the biggest news.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Hall of Fame voter, and I didn't vote for him because I still felt he was going to somehow find a way to wrestle. And, well, here we are.
Yeah, you're looking like the smart one on that one, because I don't think a lot of people were not predicting that.
I knew his passion where it was, and I just felt if it wasn't here, it's going to be somewhere else. He can't stop himself, honestly. A lot of these guys, and it's just different. He has a completely different wrestling bug mentality than, say, a Ric Flair. Ric Flair did it because he loved wrestling and wrestled for so long, but he also did it because he wanted to be in the public eye type of thing. Daniel Bryan would be happy wrestling in front of 15 people. So it's a completely different type of disease that he has. This disease is he just loves to wrestle.
Yeah, and it's, I'm not to say scary, but it's definitely interesting. I mean, the extent with which he'll go to want to wrestle. And yeah, I believe 100% that if he was going to, he'd be at PWG the next day. He'd be at every small little indie. He'd be everywhere, man. The guy would instantly be working, and just enough to get by, I think, is enough for him. But he does have, I mean, he's got a different lifestyle now, if you think about it. I mean,
yeah,
wife, kids, house. But, I mean, how sustainable, how within limits does he live? It's interesting to think about because,
if you look at that Total Bella stuff, it looks like he lives very much within his means and stuff.
Right. And, I mean, and his means are probably a lot more. I mean, he probably lives even well within, because he probably makes plenty of money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
Even his minimum, I'm sure, is good money, and, I'm sure he saved up his money throughout. I mean, yeah, so it's not like he needs the money, but, you know, it's that he loves to wrestle, and that's what he wants to do. Good for him. I wish him the best. I'm a little nervous that it won't take. He'll end up having another concussion, then we won't have him again for another 2 years or whatever. And, you know, it also makes you wonder, will he re-sign his contract? He still has to re-sign his contract come up in September, I think it is.
Right.
So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
And the way WWE works, too, I mean, it's not like between now and September, he's going to run through all of the matches that he might want to get within WWE. So that might be a carrot that they dangle, you know, because they don't run through matches. Other places you might think within that time he could get to all the big matches that he really wants to do, leave, go do all the other stuff he wants to do. Obviously, he's talked a lot about wanting to do a CMLL anniversary yep. main event, which, I mean, Daniel Bryan versus Atlantis for mask versus hair would be, I mean, that's going to be something else, I would think, in front of that huge crowd. I mean, Daniel Bryan is one of these guys who, he transcended all wrestling, and I think it does come down to that he does have that ground support from everyone. I think even people who are not 100% familiar with his backstory instantly relate to him because they just see that he's an everyman. And then if you do know the depth of his backstory, then it becomes even more enriching to see how he has succeeded. But yeah, I mean, I think the crowds in Mexico love him. The crowds in Japan love him. Everywhere he's been, he's super over, obviously, at this point. The guy is just, I mean, instantly probably the top babyface that they have as an active wrestler, and that's that really kind of changes the landscape of everything going into the biggest show of the year.
Yeah, and then, plus he's a nice guy, and people want to see him succeed. just curious on where it all pans out, and we'll see how it plays out in the next few months. I'm also hearing that Hulk Hogan might be coming back to the WWE. Is this the right time for Hulk Hogan, you think? Or, I mean, do you think this is more negative publicity on top of the Moolah thing that could happen? Or is this maybe the way the WWE way of backdooring him in because they've already been rejected once by a sponsor that they think they might be a little bit more, they don't want to be, the sponsor might not want to be a complete pain in the ass and Nick Say the Hulkster. I find it interesting, the timing right now.
Yeah, it's... I think if he made a real apology that people bought into, maybe, but I don't feel like he did. I mean, the problem with a lot of these people, their apologies are never... I mean, they're apologies, but that's not the fucking point. People are upset because you said a bunch of really racist things, saying that
but
you're
sorry. But he said them, and again, he said them supposedly behind closed doors. I mean, he was taped, he recorded it, you know, out of context. I mean, what he said wasn't out of context, but he wasn't expecting it to be public knowledge.
Right, and I mean...
It doesn't make it right, but it does... I mean, it does... I think it softens the blow a little bit, as in, yeah, well, it's still his true feelings, still horrible what he said, don't get me wrong, but at least he wasn't trying to do it maliciously, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost... I'm not going to say worse, because that's like the cliche to always say that, oh, that's even worse. But like in a way, I mean, that just shows that that's how he thinks when he thinks he can get away with saying what he really feels and that he puts up a fake veneer in front of people. And that's kind of more my point, is the apology needs to not be, I'm sorry I said the things. The apology needs to more be that I've learned and grown as a person and I was wrong in the way that I thought. And that's the thing that I think misses the point when the apologies for this kind of stuff happens, is that people just apologize essentially for being caught, which is, I know, another kind of cliche thing to say, but realistically it comes across more like whoops, I didn't mean for anyone to know I was racist. And the real point to be able to kind of reintegrate back into society is to actually own up to what you did and explain how you've grown as a person and changed, not necessarily just be like, whoops, I'll never do that again. I'll never get busted for that again. You know, and that's right. Kind of more my thing is I can't imagine sponsors or anyone forgiving him until he shows that he's really changed. And it's really tough, especially with a guy his age. I mean, people aren't going to trust that he changes because there's so much on the line for him that I don't know if it's smart for them to ever bring him back, honestly. But will it make them money? Sure, it's wrestling. I mean, I'm sorry, but like wrestling, it's not necessarily, that doesn't matter as much, because when it comes down to it, there's a lot of people who are fans of wrestling that are going to overlook or be willfully ignorant or just be actually ignorant on what actually happened. I guarantee that there's people still, as crazy as it sounds, who have no fucking clue about anything that happened with Hulk Hogan, that when he showed back up on TV, they would actually care. And they'd be excited for Hulk Hogan to be back, which I know seems insane, but I bet that there are some people who actually don't know the extent of what happened to this, which is crazy, I know, but still.
And then Dick Ebersol's son is launching a football league a year before Vince. that's got to be a big kick in the balls. One of his best friends' son doing that to him.
And the guy who made the documentary on the XFL, the guy who kind of saw all of the groundwork, probably, who knows what was divulged to him that he didn't, you know, that he then used. Yeah. I mean, he's got the business partnerships. I think, doesn't he already have a TV deal in line? He's got, I mean, he'll have first access to
his father. Yep.
Yeah. He'll have first access to the talent that Vince would be trying to procure. He has actual rules and game plans lined out on what the league is. And I heard someone, I think it was on RBR, that they were talking about it. Maybe it might have been somewhere else, but I'll give them credit. They brought up arena football, which does exist already. So people are talking about this as if, you know, XFL and you know, the Thiel League, which I think is, what is it? It's AAA or something like that. It's like Athletes Association or something. Is that, like, people are talking about those as being the number two, you know, football promotions, and they're looking over, like, actually, they're, like, 4 and 5. I mean, there's the major leagues, there's, like, the NFL, there's college football, there's arena league football that local markets that can support it already have, and then now you're going to also have, you know, this company from, you know, XFL and then the whatever Athletes Association as well. So now you're talking about five fucking football associations that are professional to semi-professional level, and like, yeah, I mean, I don't know that the market can sustain anywhere near that many, honestly.
And then Rey Mysterio's out with an injury. He's not going to be on the Long Beach New Japan show on Sunday night. And, man, that's a bummer. I really was hoping for them because I mean, the match that him and Liger, Mysterio and Liger had at Starrcade 96, it wasn't a bad match per se, but it just didn't meet the expectations. And I really thought they were going to take it, really going to push themselves. And it's a shame. And now you're hearing Ray is probably WWE bound anyway. So, I would have been curious if they would have let him do the date if he was going to go back. Are you curious to see Mysterio back in the WWE?
No. I mean, not particularly, honestly. I think he'll be fine. But I think that he's shown in Lucha Underground and on the indies that he is more than apt to work the kind of style that is, you know, of in vogue on the indies and the more action-based style right now. And I think in the WWE, he'll be toned down. He'll be, you know, he'll hit some signature five spots every match and do that whole thing, but not realistically do much more than that. So, I mean, realistically, no. I think he'll be over. He'll sell a lot of merch. He'll have some really fun matches to watch, but he could be pushing the boundaries and having amazing, you know, performances every time out, I think, in other places. So realistically, I'm not super excited for what his output is going to be in the WWE. He will be an added bonus for them, and he will produce some good matches for them. Like I said, he will sell merchandise. He will do all that, but he could do a lot more, I think, outside of the WWE.
Yeah, I'm excited to see some new matchups there, especially now that they're pushing so many of a wider variety of wrestlers. So I'm actually really curious and looking forward to him and back having another WWE run, because, like, you know, watching him and Ricochet, him and maybe him working some of these Kyle O'Reilly types, Adam, you know, Bobby Fish working, Cedric Alexander. I'm curious on seeing what he could do with some of these younger guys who are, it's now in vogue, how to work that way, work that style, if you will.
Well, do you think that he works 205 Live guys at all, or do you think that, like a Cedric Alexander, he works Rey Mysterio once Cedric maybe gets promoted to being not a 205?
I don't
wrestler?
Know. I really don't know. I think they might use him on 205. I wouldn't be shocked. I'm curious, honestly. I don't know.
It would be interesting.
I really don't know, but I could see him going to 205.
Yeah, it
if
would
he's,
be. An...
You know, if he's running a part time schedule, I could see him splitting time maybe on the main roster. You know, doing a couple of things here and there, spending some time on 205. I mean, I can actually see him going both places, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, if they let him on 205 Live, then yes, I'm a lot more excited because I think he does have a lot of good matchups there that he can have, but. Like I said, on the main roster, there's not a lot.
And now
of
that
matches.
They're getting away from, now they're going away from single brand pay per views, it's going to be tough find spots, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And he's another guy. I mean, him and Lashley. Where are spots for those guys? They both feel like. Well, I mean, obviously Mysterio's not signed yet, but Lashley felt like he was signed in a time where it makes sense to have a guy at his level for the dual branded shows. I mean. Now he comes across like a guy that's, to me, hard to find a spot for.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of that, because it seems like they're signing so much talent. They don't even, I mean, there's not much too much talent in NXT right now for what they're doing.
Yeah, that's
they can,
for sure.
They can honestly run two brands out of NXT.
Yeah, no, they probably could. I mean, they actually do. They just don't have two TV shows, but yeah, they technically
exactly.
do. They have two touring shows.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So tell us about PWG, man. And
yeah, well,
after
I was going to say.
I'll preview Wrestle Circus and Inspire Pro for this weekend.
Well, I'll say a good kind of a transition I was thinking of was the Long Beach shows and all the guys that were on this show that are scheduled to appear on the Long Beach show are guys who could, you know, theoretically make an appearance, right? I think that, you know, you've got guys who are obviously going to be there, like Will Ospreay. You've got guys that theoretically could show up based on the exposure that they've had recently in New Japan, like a Jeff Cobb, could possibly show up. Who knows where that relationship is like now with Lucha Underground, very clearly having a relationship with TNA, working that show that they're doing. And the fact that, you know, TNA has a relationship with Noah, which could make it, you know, interesting if you then let a Lucha Underground guy with that really loose affiliation be able to work New Japan. Who knows? I mean, it's a one shot in Long Beach. So they might not care. You got guys like Jonah Rock, Adam Brooks, who could theoretically are part of the Australian package for New Japan. So they could show up on the show, being that they're in town, obviously in LA here on the Friday night, you know, so it is kind of interesting to think about who could show up, who was there even watching, to see. And then you've got guys in the main event. Chuck Taylor theoretically could be on the New Japan show. I don't know if he's announced. And you got Zack Sabre Jr., who's definitely going to make an appearance there, right? So, yeah, it was an interesting thing to think about. But one thing that I questioned was, where the fuck are the Young Bucks? If they're in town for New Japan, why are they not on the PWG show, you know, a couple nights before? To say in town, they obviously live in Southern California, but it's really interesting because it's not like they're on tour somewhere else, so they're just not on the show here. I guess the first thing going into the show is the new venue, the Globe Theater in downtown LA. It's nice to be in my hood for once at a PWG show, right in my neighborhood, honestly. Probably 5 minutes by car, and, you know, I could take the bus. It was like 20 minutes. I was really enjoying that, being in my area. The lines were crazy. The security guard were wearing suits, which was interesting for PWG. Yeah, I mean, it was a real aces put together production there. Unfortunately, the guys who are working the security there have no clue how to deal with the wrestling fans who showed up at 6 in the morning and are waiting on the streets of downtown Los Angeles for hours on end. So when they finally showed up, they're like messing around. They're trying to give everyone bracelets to show that they're 21, something that they don't do in Reseda. So it was kind of I wouldn't say it was a gigantic mess, but it was interesting. I hear people complaining, oh, I wish we were back in Reseda. This isn't happening. And it's just that stereotypical people don't like anything different. They don't like any change. So that was interesting. I get inside the venue and it's super nice. There's great balconies, but the ceilings are very high. And was one thing that I noticed throughout the show is that the sound was going up into the ceilings. It was good if this was Progress or, you know, a British crowd that does a lot more of the singing chants. And I think that might be why that happens so much in England, is that those good acoustics with the big ceiling carry singing and voices like that better. But regular kind of American style chants seem to dissipate. People trying to heckle one person trying to directly heckle a wrestler or say something, unless they were insanely loud or they were up in the balcony areas, you could not hear anybody on the ground, realistically. You could barely hear the wrestlers. You couldn't hear the referees and the counts and what was going on. So that kind of changed a lot of the intimacy of the Reseda venue. But I think that the show overall was still very good. I think that, thinking about when I started going to PWG years ago at this point, when I started watching PWG compared to now, even with stuff like local Southern California boys showing up here in this match, in this show, it really kind of stood out just how different the landscape of PWG is at this point. I think it's really gone past the point of having like the best of the best, unfortunately. There's a lot of, not, I won't say bad, but there's a lot of people who are not going to always deliver knock it out of the park matches, and that was very evident in the opening match. Joey Janela, Ray Horace. Love Joey Janela, but he is not kind of built for wrestling a Ray Horace type. I think that they want Joey Janela to maybe be the new Brian Cage in kind of opening up the shows and giving a crazy match to start the shows, but he just doesn't have that same ability to mix with anyone and have fucking nutty matches like that. So realistically, I mean, he's having a lot of stuff that comes across a little bit slow, stuff that comes across missing a lot of crispness and impact on the moves just because of his body type and the way that he's built. Nothing that was really horribly botched, but just everything was a little bit off, unfortunately, there. So that was an opening match that did not deliver. Next, what did deliver, the four-way with the locals. I thought the biggest standout, honestly, for this, I mean, Brody King is obviously the one that everyone thinks of, but to me, I thought the best standout was Jake Atlas. He really bridged the gap between like a Brody and an Eli, where Eli is the smallest guy flying around. Brody's the big guy with the bruising. Jake Atlas was able to be kind of in between enough to work with everyone in the match. Douglas James, unfortunately, kind of fell to the wayside as being the other middle guy. the guy that was really kind of middling and did, he essentially came across like a less important Jake Atlas in the match, unfortunately, in that Jake Atlas was that, like I said, hybrid that could work. He could work the smallest guy and he could work the biggest guy. He could be really believable in both spots. He was able to mix in some high flying and some great looking dives while also being able to show off some power. Unfortunately, he went for a moonsault off the top to the floor that appeared to either have been mistimed, miscommunicated, or just, I don't know, went to hell. But Brody King was all the way on the other side of the ring by the time he went for the moonsault. So poor Jake Atlas posted almost directly on his knee, on his feet. Appeared, I mean, sounded to me like there's no way he didn't mess up some ligaments or some joints in his feet. The way that he hit just looks so bad. But he gets back in the ring, continues to wrestle. I mean, it was insane to see that he was the one who went back in wrestling when Brody King was the one who should have been, seemed like he should have been unscathed, but he stays on the floor as Atlas goes right back in there and goes to town on James. Looks fine, looks like he's in good shape, but then by the end when they do all the crazy big dives and Brody King does a big dive on the top onto the pile of all the other three, Jake Atlas unfortunately does not get up for the rest of the match, clutching at his leg, very clearly got hurt. I did hear him mentioning to someone else that he does not know, or he pretty much assumes that he will not be wrestling tonight on the AWS show to give away when we're recording this. But by the time you hear it, the show will probably have already happened. But unfortunately, he's injured enough to be pretty sure he's not going to be able to wrestle the next day, which sucks because I thought he looked good here. I hope that getting hurt, having that one kind of mistimed moonsault spot that I couldn't say who was to blame because I'm not, you know, I wasn't involved in putting the match together or whatever. I hope that that doesn't affect PWG's kind of wanting to bring the guy back because I think he had star quality, star aura. And like I said, he's the perfect wrestler for PWG, honestly, in that he's got enough size to show off some power and work with anyone, but he can fly and move. Very obvious gymnastic background and really the most polished worker, I thought, of the bunch. With Brody King coming across with the most star power, obviously, because he just kind of has that in spades already, and it's really interesting how he's become a star so quickly. But I thought that, for me, the standout of this was Atlas. Next, we go into a tag match that I was the most looking forward to, I think, out of everything on the show. We got Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz versus Bandido and Flamita. It did not disappoint. These guys did most of the stuff that they've been doing with each other in Dragon Gate lately, everything super on point. I took the time to tell Zachary Wentz that just how impressed with I am and how better he's gotten since spending time in Dragon Gate. He seemed to be appreciative of that. I did couch it in saying I'm not trying to come across, and I hate to come across like one of these smarky assholes saying something like I know anything about wrestling, but just watching you, I've been a fan, but I feel like you've even improved quite a bit. I think he took it well. He was, you know, pretty nice and pretty happy to hear it. Because, yeah, these guys are, especially Zach Wentz. I mean, Desmond already looked good. He's looking even better. But Zach, I mean, the guy is precision now. He used to come across a lot more kind of devil-may-care, throwing his body around with stuff that could look sloppy. Now, I mean, everything looks good. His striking looks better. Same for Desmond. Bandita and Flamita were insane. The spots that they do, the lucha that they do, the in and out, the double teams. I mean, doing the big, Flamita makes stuff look effortless that should be hard. I mean, he pops up onto Bandito's shoulders, standing completely up, and then does a Swanton Bomb off the top, all in one motion, where you don't even, it doesn't feel like he even hesitates for a second posting on Bandito's shoulders. He's just already flying off the shoulders into the air. It's really, really impressive stuff there. Quick match, but definitely a lot packed into it, but didn't feel crazy over the top. It was interesting for a sub 10-minute match. It still felt like it ebbed and flowed and wasn't just crazy spot, spot, spot. The next match, unfortunately for me, was probably my down match of the night, other than the opener. Will Ospreay versus Adam Brooks. Felt like they're trying to tell a story here. It feels like Will Ospreay misunderstands the concept of needing to slow down. It feels like he doesn't understand that when people say he does too much and he's too fast in his matches, that he takes that too literally and all he does is the same stuff now but slowed down, and doesn't really add any emotion or storytelling. Brooks, obviously, his whole thing is just a lot of shtick and trying to be like a cheeky guy who does some cheating. But for me, that doesn't, that wasn't a story for me to buy into. And then out of nowhere, I mean, there is a point towards the middle end of the match that has an insane fucking sequence with some of the craziest stuff that you'll ever see in wrestling. But to me, that doesn't make a match. So while I did really enjoy it, and then after that, they go into the crazy finishes and the back and forth with all the falsies and all that. So, like, from that point, it was like, you know, it was fine, but the match was very long to be built off of that. Best match of the night for me, Jeff Cobb versus Jonah Rock, ended up stealing the show for me in a lot of ways. These guys, insanely impressive, both using their size to their advantage. Jeff Cobb is a freak of nature, being able to effortlessly deadlift suplex Jonah Rock around. Big ass headbutts back and forth, selling off the kind of Samoan versus Guamanian thing. Love these guys just going at each other. Big, like I said, big time hoss fight. Great striking. Everything looked good. Both guys very nimble, able to trade blows back and forth. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Matt Riddle. For me, not much to say. Obviously, it's, you know, the ceiling, depending on your like of these guys, is like probably 4 or 4.5 stars, all the way down to probably like 3.5 stars, depending on what level of burnt out you are on these guys. But I mean, they're always fantastic together, but realistically, I mean, there's not much to say at this point about these guys' matchups. You know what to expect, and that's exactly what they did here. Main event, Keith Lee versus Chuck Taylor for the title. This was a lot of shtick, a great story, a lot of gimmickry with Chuck even getting on the mic throughout the match over and repeatedly complaining to the fans for cheering the gigantic man against the beat up champion who's been doing this for, you know, here for 10 years and all this, talking basically about how he's got a pinched nerve and his arms goes numb, but you're going to, you know, cheer the giant against him and boo him like fucking Keith Lee's the underdog. He's the champion. He deserves all this stuff. And it was really good. The story of the match itself was really well done, with Chuck wearing Keith Lee down, can't get him off his feet, but repeatedly, I mean, going to the top rope over and over again for big attacks on Keith to wear him down, wear him out, do what he can, being able to hit a version of the Awful Waffle using the ropes as an advantage, all the stuff that he could do. But when it came down to it, no matter how much Chuck tried to wear Keith Lee down, he wasn't able to put him away. And I'll just spoil it for anybody. Skip ahead a little bit if you don't want the big spoiler of the night, which is Keith Lee wins the title. Chuck Taylor is down. Chuck Taylor says, "I hope you could be the champion. I couldn't be." And then Keith gets the microphone. And I've heard some talk. I've been actually even part of conversations about Keith Lee is not a good top guy for companies. I did like him in Inspire. I think me and you both liked him as the champion in Inspire, but not necessarily a big fan of him as champion in WWN. But here in PWG, felt more like, with his post-match promo, more like Inspire, a lot more kind of carries himself with some gravitas, comes across like a guy who's really, really happy to be in PWG, to be the champion. So I'm looking forward to his title run as the ace of the company. I actually think he's a guy that for once the crowd won't turn on and make him into a heel as the champion of PWG, and a guy that I'm looking forward to see what his title reign means for the future of PWG.
Fair enough. I'm checking out. WrestleCircus this weekend along with Inspire Pro. This is WrestleCircus was having problems with the venue. The one they place they normally run, I guess, said they are charging more now. So then they're going to go run at Emos. And then they're running 4 times the amount they're running. So now they're running in the building, the same building that Inspire was running in the day on Sunday. I don't know. I mean, normally WrestleCircus claims to have about 500 people in there. That's the old Inspire building. And, I mean, that's normally was set up for like 250, 300 people. So I'm kind of curious. They pushed the show back to starting off at 8 o'clock tonight as opposed to normally at 7. This company hasn't shown that they can get a show done in 3.5 hours. I mean, it sounds like this show's going to go past midnight.
What do you think? I'm very sorry for you. Well, the show last night for me ended probably right at about midnight. But yeah, I apologize to you for that, because it sounds like it's probably going to go forever. It's going to be cramped, and hopefully it's...
Yeah, I feel like I might not even go tonight now, even though I've already bought the ticket, because just the idea of being cramped in the damn building. And I don't even like going up there up north anyway, because it's a trek for me. And now I'm going to go back-to-back nights. I said once is cool. Twice, back-to-back days is my idea of fun. And the fact that I think the show honestly will end up at like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, I don't have any confidence in them getting off a 4-hour show at all.
Yeah, I know for sure.
And maybe it's possible that they are drawing less, and that's maybe why they're switching buildings. And maybe it's true that that Tessa Blanchard, Brian Cage match kind of, you know, I mentioned that, like, how it it might not have come to haunt you right now, but in a future show or two, you don't see the immediate numbers of the first show. It usually gradually shows that you pissed off your clientele. And now they're also saying they're not going to be running the next 2 months, so they're back to that stop-and-go type of thing. It's just kind of frustrating. And then, you know, they didn't offer refunds on the tickets that they switched to a different venue, because I honestly think you should, because I bought tickets under the impression that it was gonna be here, and now it's somewhere else, and I just find it a little discerning. But overall, it's a pretty good card. The main events: Penta El Zero versus Shane Strickland. You have the girls, Tessa Blanchard versus Chelsea Green. The match I think is going to be the best match of the night: Rey Fénix versus Desmond Xavier. We have Masada versus Jordan Lennox. Extra Talented versus the Dirty Devils, which another could be a good one. You have a circus-style Fatal 4-Way, which is Teddy Hart versus Andrew Everett, versus Zachary Wentz versus Myron Reed. A lot of good talent there. JT Dunn versus Shane Taylor, and Jervis and Kylie Rae versus Serpentico and Leva Bate. Overall, the card seems interesting to me, but I don't know if I'd want to go through all this fucking hassle of having to go all the way up north for it. So I'm not sure. I wish you could get to the bottom of it, because it just sounds fishy that you have a building and then you pull out because they're charging you more this time. I don't know. They haven't inspired trust in me and stuff. And now Inspire Pro also has a really fun card. You have Gino versus Ethan Price, which I could live without. They have a really fun six-man where they have Rex Andrews, T-Ray, who's a guy who has a big upside, Ashton Jacobs is solid, versus Andy Dalton, Masada, and Cody Lane. I think that could be a possible show-stealing match. You have Kylie Rae versus Thunder Rosa, which I honestly think is going to be a better match than Tessa and Chelsea Green, tell you the truth. Matthew Palmer versus Massive. Massive is a guy who's been around Texas Indies for a long time. He's just a big dude. I think Palmer will make it interesting because he's always interesting. Steve Arena versus Joey Janela, I think, is another show stealer. They were arguing online where ACH, Matt, felt like his match shouldn't go on last, but it is. He felt Janela or Reno should go on last. But I think that's going to be a really good match. Then we have Ricky Starks versus Ryan Davidson. I think that'll be a really good match. Tempo versus Jordan Lennox. I don't know. Tempo, he's the champ right now. He's a guy who the crowd views as a big star, but he's not a great worker. He's athletic, has a good look. Crowd gets behind him. He has some charisma, but I'm not sold on him having a great match with Jordan Lennox. We'll see. And then in the main event, they have ACH defending his title in a three-way with versus Davey Vega. And ACH is kind of like his Larry Zbyszko to Bruno Sammartino, his protege, Zach Taylor, putting Zach Taylor in his biggest high-profile match he's ever had. It could be interesting. We'll see where that goes. I really, the Inspire Pro showing really has me going. I think it should be pretty good. Again, the Wrestle Circus and their history of running long shows just terrifies me. I have no desire, honestly, to be up north at 1 o'clock in the morning on a wrestling show. It's one thing when it's Mania weekend and, like, I worked this morning. I'd be up at work. I was at work at 4:30 in the morning. So being up all day, it would be a struggle. So I'm not sure if I'm even going to go now. Also want to say a big shout-out to my buddy, congratulations to Chris Beard. He's the head coach at Texas Tech. He was also, that's what he's known for. I knew him as my teammate in high school at for the Woodlands Highlanders, the McCullough Highlanders. So I just want to give him a big shout out going to the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament. March Madness, baby. Fear the beard, man. Good guy. Always had a great mind for basketball, and shows you hard work can't pay off. On that note, why don't we take a break, and then we'll get right back into the show proper.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back, man. And we're back. We're going to look at some CWF Mid-Atlantic here. They're here. They're out and about. They're on tour here. They're back at Chapel Hill, kind of. They're home away from home. They had that amazing Eric Royal, Snooty Fox match that was so heated, where Snooty got buried by the Duke flag in Chapel Hill, which is just nutso. And here we have the rematch, which is a Chapel Hill street fight, and that's the main event. But it opens up with a tag match that I think could be the match that might be the match to headline the Canoodle Cup. I think these are guys that both teams could possibly be winners. And it's Kane Justice and Ethan Sharp versus Richards and McAllister. What you make of the match, man?
I really enjoyed the match. I'm actually really thrown off by the Canoodle Cup this year. Like, I guess I keep thinking that it's starting before it is. And I think what's mixing me up is the Dusty Rhodes Classic and then them talking about the Canoodle Cup stuff. Like, I thought that this was a Canoodle Cup match, but I guess it's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I liked the match. I thought that it was
It starts in a couple weeks. It starts, like, right after Mania.
Right, and it's going to... And I know the Canoodle Cup is just going to be... It's basically one show, and they're going to do all the matches. It's going to split over a couple episodes, but they're going to film it all in one show, I think, like they did last year, probably. So that's part of what's throwing me off, is the Dusty Classic, how they do them, like, in pieces. They've been doing the matches in pieces. I'm expecting them to do the same thing in CWF. It's kind of mixing. Either way, I was really impressed at the points in here. I mean, after he had kind of done some bullshit and running around and a little bit of stooging to Nick, but then when he tags in Kane, this is Ethan Sharp, he tags in Kane. Kane kind of changes the complexion of the match and is able to set up the heat on Nick with then tagging in Sharp. But it was impressive to me that I was buying into Sharp working heat on Nick Richards, and just a few months ago that would seem ridiculous because Sharp has really developed. I think, dude, talk about Kane and Sharp kind of helping to push each other up the ladder together is working really well. They both looked good here. Kane just has kind of an it factory thing. There was something here in this match that I thought about it and I didn't write it in my notes, and then I wasn't sure I want to say it because it kind of sounds bad, but it reminds me of Dynamite Kid, Chris Benoit. There's like a snappiness and an aggression to everything he does that, like, it's almost hard to put your finger on it to, like, explain it. But when you see it, you appreciate it. That his stuff looks so much better than everyone else's. Even just his little stuff. And yeah, it's just fantastic. And yeah, so, I mean, I loved it. It was interesting Nick Richards taking most of the heat. He gets the hot tag to McAllister, who looks fantastic. Really messing them all up. Looks to be going for their double team cutter that they've been using as a finish, but Sharp and Kane are able to fight it off, which I thought was impressive, or an interesting note to have, to then set up with the finish being the Nick Richards hits a cutter, McAllister hits an STO, where one of the guys lands on his partner, and then they pin him for the win, and the crowd was insane. The Chapel Hill crowd is amazing. Their heat is fantastic. It's kind of that TNA should run all their shows in England thing, where you do sometimes go, like, they should do all of their shows at Chapel Hill because of how hot the crowd is, but, you know, they might burn them out or whatever, and I totally understand that they have the Sportatorium set up worked out for them, but yeah, this crowd is great, and it makes everything better.
Yeah, it does. It also felt like maybe getting away from the Sportatorium, some of the editing was much better on the show this time around, it seemed anyway. Did it seem like that to you?
Yeah, it's part of it probably too is that it's easier to overlook it because the road shows weren't always as slickly produced as the Sportatorium shows.
Yeah, it felt more like, you know, it felt more like a normal a promotion, if you will. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. So the glitches don't stand out as much here, and yeah, they didn't. Yeah, I wasn't like, this is one of the first shows where I wasn't like offended by how bad the editing was and the guys shooting ringside this time around. Obviously, by seeing it, this is a good sized crowd. I like how both teams play the crowd. Like, I love Richards actually in the crowd booing Kane and Sharp going along with the crowd. I thought the shine was really fun. I love the double team to set up the heat where Sharp holds Richards while Kane kicks his shoulder. The heat was solid. The illegal tag didn't get heat because it wasn't really played up well. I mean, they set it up and the ref didn't really go wrong with it, and so therefore the crowd, it's kind of like it was like someone told a joke that just landed flatly, and that's what they did here. It was really, I could tell they were trying to do that, but the ref either didn't get it or didn't follow it, or yeah, it just felt like the idea died a death out there. But thankfully, it was really quick. The focus, I liked how they focused on Richard's neck. The hot tag was fun with McAllister running wild. I thought the finish was a fun little finish to boot, too. I give it, like, 2.5 stars. I felt like it could have been better. Like, it felt like some of the heat was a little just there. Felt like some of the shine was just there. As opposed to being super gritty or, you know, like, a difference between a like, this was a good, solid Southern tag. But it felt like there was a little bit of a lot more gaga and... And Kane and Ethan are good at it, good at Gaga, but it was just, I felt like because these guys, Kane coming off a feud with Nick, it should have been a little bit more personal, and the Gaga could have been cut to a little bit. I just didn't think the Gaga would have worked right then and there. It was the two teams that had never really worked each other. That wasn't the backstory. Then I could buy it, but, you know, you're just coming off a hot feud of Nick and Kane, which I thought was the best built thing going into Battlecade, and they kind of drop it and they mention it, but it just didn't transpire to me on the page. Then we got Eric Andrews versus KL3, I guess his name is.
I thought it was KL3.
Okay, like, KL3, right?
Three, like the number three.
Oh, three?
Yeah. Okay. I think that's what it was.
Okay, well, nonetheless, Andrews out with the golden ticket. You know, this is pretty much a squash with Andrews going over strong. I understand what they're trying to do because Andrews has the golden ticket, but Andrews has been betrayed, and this is, in my opinion, pretty much he's been honky-tonk, man, where even the jobbers have a chance of beating the guy. The guy's skinny. He's kind of mangled hair. He's not a guy who's going out and looking strong, if you will. His character is he outsmarts you. And so to see him go and just destroy a guy in 3 minutes, it's just not his character. And I felt, you know, yeah, I understand what the book is trying to do. He's trying to get the guy a golden ticket, a big win. So on paper, it makes sense. But when you look at it, it just goes against his character, which is not. That's just not his character at all, you know. Andrews is a guy who was to his craft. He would get some sneaky wins. Every now and then, he'd have like that big moment, like versus a Trevor Lee, where they'd go 25 minutes or so. But he was never about a guy who was the guy who guzzled somebody and won, because that's just not his character. You don't believe that he could do that to you. He's a guy who was always coming out a way to squeak out the win. What do you think about my complaints about the booking on this match?
I agree with you quite a bit, actually, with what you're saying there. I guess I would say it proves itself, kind of your point proves itself with the fact that that the crowd was pretty dead here after we're talking about how good the crowd here is at Chapel Hill. They were a lot less... They're a lot less into this match, so that probably hurt it quite a bit, was that it didn't feel... Number one, it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like it had any stakes. It was... I think you're right that what made the Andrews matches work was that he was very good at making you believe that the people he was facing could beat him, and this match never had that feeling at all. So, yeah, I think that I agree with you 100%. My kind of nitpicks of it were more on that side, that the crowd didn't buy into the match because they didn't see any risk at all for Andrews. He felt like he was a foregone conclusion to win. But the kind of the point that you make there is another side of the same coin, which is that the problem there is that the booking doesn't fit Andrews' character. So that's why the crowd checked out.
And even the, what he was playing up with the, you know, even the voting, he was a sneaky character, you know, he was trying to outsmart everybody. Yeah. And just, yep. Just didn't work. And, you know, I guess, you know, obviously Andrews is lined for a big push. And I mean, he was always had a solid push, and he had a solid character. I don't know. I like the guy as a worker. I just don't know. I just don't see him as a top of the card type of guy. I count him as a guy who I can count on to have a good matches and get heat. But it's a fine line, man. Sometimes you got to pick the right time and the right character to elevate, and it's just a shame. I mean, I know he has more experience, but I mean, you have someone like Kane Justice there who you buy as an ass kicker. You know his history. You've heard the stories, you know. He choked out Smith Garrett and at the fan convention in October in the lobby. I mean, it's legit. The guy has skills, you know. He rolled around with Johnny P, made him tap out in the ring at the CWF FanCon. These are real stories. These aren't just make-believe notches in Kane's belt, you know. This is the real deal and stuff. The guy can go, and you buy him, and he gets heat. I understand why you want to go. You want to give Andrews, but it's just about the type of character. I mean, Andrews is just a more seasoned Ethan Sharp type of thing. But when you buy him higher on the card than Ethan, but it's like there's kind of like the same similar character. They're natural chicken shits at heart. And King is a natural chicken shit too, but he's also has a mean streak in him, and you don't want to fuck with him. Get on the wrong side of Kane Justice, then you get a twist ending. So you got to find that's a fine line of finding that type of character.
Well, and you make that transition more seamless, and this felt a little bit too abrupt.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it's got to build to it. I mean, sometimes you kind of have to go switch gears, and you got to create new guys on top because you lose all your top guys. We've seen that, like you meet with ECW. We've seen WWE do it sometimes when they recast their characters, like JBL as ass-kicking tag team wrestler became JBL world champion, and it didn't take people took a while for people to buy into because it was such an abrupt change, and that's kind of with Andrews, and I'm more of a natural type of thing where you have a history. It's hard you've been this character. It's hard to look at you in a different light, and it takes a while. And I especially when he's already has a successful character, you know, he doesn't have a crappy character, you know, so it makes it even harder. Then we get the street fight of Eric Royal and Snooty Fox. And before we get into it, I'll let you talk about it first. Is I really liked this match, but I felt they could have accomplished it with a little because this thing went like 30 plus minutes. I felt they could have easily done it in 20 and made it a little better. But I still thought this was a hell of a match. What you make of it, man?
Yeah, it went too long. Is just my biggest complaint here.
And I will say they kept the crowd pretty much 95% of the time. They got lulled away for a little bit, but they were. Because Eric Royal's a master, is great, and he was able. It was amazing that he was able to keep the crowd as long as he did.
Yeah, and so I mean the Gaga and the stuff on paper about brawling around the building and choking with the hose and stuff. It was like it's good, but it does on paper. I think is better than it is a lot of times in execution. They did keep the heat very well, I thought, throughout, and they did a good job for what they were doing, but yeah, they should have cut this match down quite a bit. I really liked the opening, I really liked the finish, I liked Snooty getting defiant and countering the trash talking towards the end from Eric Royal, to then set up him hitting a big dive. I thought that was really cool. There was just a lot of kind of BS and hoopla for the finish, and I like that the continuity and the callback to the Nux. It felt like it was something that kind of dropped off, but you bring it back because the Nux were involved in their last match in Chapel Hill and were a big part of the storyline. I don't know if that was a full year ago or how long ago that was, but it was nice to bring that back here.
Nah, was it a full year, brother? It was like September, I want to say.
Was it like September? Okay, so it was
yeah,
last year.
Yeah, because I remember going into the Rumble, and I started booking Battlecade in my mind. And so, yeah, because I remember, yes, I went to the Rumble in October the week before that aired. It aired the week before I went to the Rumble.
Okay. Well, I was thinking of the Chapel Hill match between Snooty and Eric Royal, the last Chapel Hill match between the two.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, put the boot flag on him.
That was like September. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know.
It aired the week. And it might have happened in August, but July or August. But it aired, I think it might have been August, but it aired September.
So it was like right 6 months ago, basically.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Well, yeah, so, you know, I mean, there's still good continuity there that I enjoyed. I thought Snooty looked good in the beginning, liked the power slam early. I liked that there was a little bit of help for Eric Royal, but not a lot. I liked like I said, the brawling around the building, going out to the fields and stuff, but that was just too long. They could have really cut this down. You're completely right. I like the hoopla finishes when they do this, where it ends up the other way. So, you know, they do the hoopla all the time, and it's fine. I think that they actually do a pretty good job of keeping it only to the All-Stars and not letting it get overbearing, but then it also makes it even better when there's still all the bullshit finish, but it pays off and the heel get their comeuppance and the babyface gets the win. It makes it even better because even with all the extra junk, he still overcame. So yeah, I liked the match quite a bit, and I thought that Eric Royal did a really good job here playing his role in this, but I think that they expected to be able to fill more time than they really were able to.
Yeah. I still gave the match 3 3/4 stars because what they did was pretty awesome, and they did keep the heat with the crowd. I mean, first let's check the boxes. Okay, Eric Royal, check. He's in a street fighting outfit. He has the ripped up shirt, freaking long pants. You know, I can even buy him in the cargo pants because they're more militant. So I can buy him in a street fight, Snooty. Just shows up in his regular stuff. Snooty needed some street fighting attire, some jeans, some ripped up jeans, and a muscle shirt. maybe a University of North Carolina muscle shirt, wife beater or something. I could have bought a little bit more in a street fight. I thought that there was like a ton of heat in this match. Snooty is over like Grover here. Royal stooging and shining up Snooty really well. They're fighting into the crowd. They're fighting on the outside. All this stuff is pretty awesome. Royal has now found the plunder, and they're using plunder towards the finish. I felt they just went a little long. Like, you know, I would have cut probably about 10 minutes of this thing because I felt they kicked out of a lot of stuff on top of it. But I will tell you, this was great. I mean, you set up the first match was a setup to put heat on Snooty Fox to get the crowd even more behind their baby face. And the key was Snooty Fox had to win the gimmick match. Okay. If you beat your baby face again in the gimmick match, you might as well just write off Snooty Fox's drawing power. He's the draw for this neighborhood. You know, he's their JYD versus Butch Reed. And this is New Orleans on a smaller scale. And you know what? If freaking JYD always got painted yellow in the stip or got beat up with the chain match on the stip matches, JYD would have lost his drawing power. You got to find the fine line of the heel can win, but he can't lose the feud. That's the key. And they did it right here with Snooty going over strong in a big gimmick match where he took all of Royal's best shots and cheap shots. And it was, you know, it was stacked against him, except for him and his people. And then the people won. And it was, I thought it was brilliantly booked. And yes, I mean, that to me, it was the only way. Eric Royal is a way better worker and is way more advanced than Snooty Fox at this point in time. But Snooty Fox has the tangible thing you can't teach, and that's being able to draw. And he's a legitimate draw in Chapel Hill, and he's a big deal to have those people. And if they would have beaten him in his hometown back to back, that would have been shame on the bookers. And they really understand what it is about. And it's about making money and not about keeping people happy and stuff. This is about making money. And the next thing is you can now bring Snooty, you can work at Trevor Lee for a title shot type of thing in this neighborhood, or you go into another feud. You got to protect. You can't kill your golden goose in that neighborhood, and that guy, golden goose, is Snooty Fox. Overall, I thought this was a great show, top to bottom. There's some small nerfball complaints, like I thought the main event went a little too long, but I still thought it was a hellacious brawl, and bought into it. I liked all the... I actually loved all the brawling around outside and using the fence and all the stiff shots. I just felt, again, it went a little too long. We didn't need all of it. They could have condensed it down, and I think it would have worked for the better. But with that said, it was pretty damn impressive how well they kept the crowd heat and keep them at a fever pitch throughout the match. Anything you want to talk about, Tim, before we head off on this one?
Yeah, no, nothing else. I agree with you. The field trip episodes are the best for the CWF a lot of times. I really enjoy them, even if they're not always the most narrative-driven. This one was, which was good. They did stick with and kind of pay off some stories, but it's almost like a separate universe storyline, as I talked about. It felt like the Snooty Fox-Eric Royal interactions had been to a minimum since the last Chapel Hill show, and then they bring it back here as if there hasn't been all this time in between, playing off the continuity and all that. But, you know, it works really well with this crowd, and it's still enjoyable to watch.
Hell yeah. Now let's move over to NWL Episode 60. We talked about the main event last week, so we're not going to talk about the Maverick versus... Gary J match, but we have Maverick arrives and he blows off Matt Jackson, which I liked. And by Matt Jackson, I mean Pierre Abernathy, using the pseudonym of Matt Jackson. I thought this was fine and gets Maverick, Max, explains Maverick as a no-nonsense heel. What do you think?
Yeah, I like the opening. I like that the show always opens with Matt Jackson doing some stupid shit out in the back. It's kind of I mean, not always, but I like when it does because it's a mix up and it's not just the in the promo, the, you know, in the ring promo with the general manager or whatever top wrestler thing that they had to do to open up a show. But they have a nice pattern of opening with it, and I think it does get Maverick over as the new champion.
Yep. And that opens up with Leo Howlett versus Fuego del Sol. What'd you make of this, man?
I was not expecting Fuego del Sol to get so much offense here, but he looked really good, actually. He was nice as stick and move with some big flying spots. He was better than I was expecting just from the way that he looked. I thought that this was going to be a squash match for Leo Howlett, just because I was not familiar with Fuego del Sol and his look and everything. He didn't come across like a guy that would be featured, but he did pretty well here. Leo used his size to his advantage, I thought, pretty well in the match. He looked good. Leo has a nice kind of crispness and preciseness to his work. He's another guy who is kind of, unfortunately, I think, hidden in NWL as being, I'm not saying he's a top level indie, he would be a top level worker, but he's a guy who I think that a lot more people could appreciate how good he was if they were paying attention to this. Well, Fuego del Sol showed me something here too. I thought that he looked good in his flying and playing the smaller man, sticking and moving really well. I enjoyed this match actually a lot all the way through. I thought that both guys looked really good for what I was not expecting much from.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I thought it was good, solid stuff. I gave it like 2.25. You know, it's not the blowaway, but it tells a story. We have Leo beating on Fuego early, and it's really kind of like a total mugging early on, where Leo is just beating the crap out of Fuego. But Fuego makes a comeback. But for me, some of his offense looked a little weak. I liked his flying, but some of his strikes could have been a little bit more snug. Some of the type of Rana he did was pretty impressive by Del Sol. The big tope DDT by Fuego was awesome. Overall, solid stuff. That's the thing. Fuego had a lot of awesome stuff, but then as you can tell, he's still a little young. Has some upside. He needs to develop and work on some of those fundamentals, you know. He has the sizzle, he has the sizzle. Now he needs to work on the steak, which is, to me, the most important thing, you know. Then we get a Jeremy Wyatt promo, and Kingston interrupts. Good, solid stuff to set up their match, right?
Yeah, exactly. I like it, and I'm really enjoying Kingston here playing off his character of being kind of a loose cannon.
Then we get the match. I watched both. I watched the TV, the YouTube version, and the one unedited version.
I did not watch the unedited version. Unfortunately, I only got the TV version on this.
Yeah, the unedited version again is better.
Okay.
They add in. They focus a lot more on Wyatt working over Kingston's neck. That doesn't really. I mean, they do a little bit. They touch on it and they work it in the. In the TV, in the the YouTube version, but the full match has a little bit more, and we get some more selling from Kingston. So I enjoyed it. I actually bumped up the match by like a half a star because of it. Battle of the Kings, so I like that. And I like Wyatt on the bike early because Kingston's supposed to be the badass, and you see Wyatt. He's in the arm work first, but then he settles on the neck and really does a great job of working the neck. And I thought Kingston sold it really well. And it really puts over something people don't really talk a whole lot about Kingston. But, yeah, his selling of the neck here was really, really well done. I liked the strikes to the neck into a crossface. I thought it was pretty nasty from Wyatt. The Strider interference was kind of blah. But overall, I thought it was a good match, and I hope we see these guys down the line. I gave it 3.5. What'd you make of it, man?
Yeah, I agree with that. I almost, weirdly, even with how good this was, think that the match itself was somewhat overshadowed for me, with how good it is, by the post-match stuff with Eddie Kingston. I thought was the best part of this whole thing. Kingston comes across like a legitimate loose cannon. Everything he does to me comes across real, even if this is like, I think almost anybody else doing this stuff would feel a little bit too like shooty shoot. Oh, look at me, I'm going off script. But Kingston, I just buy into his emotion every time. I don't know why. I mean, I really don't, because, like, every fucking time this stuff happens, I always really believe it. Like, even the stuff that was going on in AAW, I'm always... And then the way that he plays social media and the way that the people and the bookers are involved, I think I almost hear people say, like, essentially we just let him do whatever he wants, and that he does kind of overstep boundaries that they don't want him to at times. So I think that's part of why I buy into it, is because they also are able to kind of foster that by saying stuff like that online and making you really believe, like, he's just doing whatever the fuck he wants whenever he wants. And so, yeah, I thought that, like I said, the match itself was very good. And I did like, I mean, I thought Kingston used his size to his advantage. Jeremy Wyatt was playing the crafty kind of veteran who's a more of a technical wrestler. I loved the work on the arm and the shoulder. Kingston's been playing up that kind of nerve damage and issues with his neck and arms for a while. I mean, that goes across every company with the way that he's wrestled this hard style for a long time. So I thought that was fantastic. And yeah, so I just, again, the match was great, but the post-match stuff is what puts it over the top for me. I mean, the guy just comes across, he's selling the pile driver as if it was the worst fucking thing. He talks about how he got fucked over in there and all this shit. And I would say my one issue with the match is that Wyatt came across a little bit too straight up throughout the match for me to then win the match with interference and cheating. I wish that he had played up a little bit, being underhanded a little bit more throughout the match to then play into the finish of using the shortcut to win, because otherwise he came across like he was a pretty honorable wrestler throughout this match and then just kind of tacked on the finish at the end with the underhanded finish at the end. But otherwise, I thought that it was very good.
Yeah, I can totally see that. You think Wyatt has some of the best psychology in wrestling right now? It just seems like it. I mean, we've seen him work an arm, a leg, and now a neck.
Right, arm, leg, neck. He was working, I think he was working, like, over the body on a match a little while ago, like the midsection and stuff. I mean, the guy is, yeah, he's very good. With a guy like Zach Gibson just recently getting signed to a UK-style contract for WWE, he was the focus guy for me for a while there. I think we both really liked him, but yeah, I think Wyatt is actually taking up that mantle right now, especially for
me. Because he does it differently, you know. You never know what. It's similar that he's attacking a body part, but you never know which body part he's going after, you know.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. That
so makes it a lot different. Like, you know, Okada's always working over the neck for Rainmaker. You know, Zach is going to town, going to the bank on that arm. But yeah, you know, you see why I do a little bit of all different things. It makes it's fun, I'll tell you. On that note, when we take a break and when we come back, we'll talk NXT and then Back Label Pro.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back and we're looking at NXT first. And my God, was this not a great opening? Now, I don't read the spoilers, do you?
I do not. I never read the spoilers, yeah.
How? I didn't see this angle forming like this at all. Did you?
No, not at all, actually.
This,
yeah.
Well, I thought this was an incredible angle because I didn't see it coming. And when you're able to catch me with a stiff jab because you don't see it coming, you did your job. And all I can say, this might have been one of my favorite angles of all in the last 10 years because I didn't see it coming. And you know, there's the sake of swerving you for the sake of swerve. That's not what happened here. This was actually full of logic, and it was just so well presented, you didn't see it coming. And you have Ciampa's out, and he finally speaks, and the crowd's just all over his ass. And he's going from person to person, ripping up signs. There's an old lady. There's a girl he's bullying. And there's another person, and they all had, like, signs up, and they get the last sign to rip it, and Johnny Gargano's there! And a fucking fight ensues. Fuck was it. I never would have thought it was going to be there. That payoff of the setup of this angle was tremendous. And I mean, if someone said I saw that coming a mile away, they're a liar. This thing was so well presented, and felt fresh, and it was just great. What about you, man? What are your feelings here?
Yeah, I'm with you completely. I thought that it was great. I did not see it coming because they've been doing so little with this and milking the crowd heat and having Ciampa not even talk that you don't expect.
You thought the payoff was going to be he finally speaks.
Yeah,
you
think it's going to be small again because they're slowly milking this stuff and they're just getting. But then it's huge and it's the Johnny Gargano jumping him and it's the fire and it's the passion. And it just shows, I mean, it continues to show what makes Gargano stand out right now so much as a wrestler, and you play that off of Ciampa, you know, being so hated, is that when Gargano shows up, the passion, the fire, the energy goes through the roof, and the whole place goes fucking crazy, and just like you, buying into it, you, like, we all just instantly are just fucking enamored with everything that's going on with the guy so much that you're just super excited. So yeah, I mean, perfect angle, perfect way to swerve it, but not swerve, it's not a swerve in the way that people use it now, where they mean, like, a surprise. It's a swerve in that, like, it's you think it's going one way, and then it comes kind of out of left field with something else, but it didn't change anything. It didn't go, oh, yeah, it turns out that Vince McMahon was actually pretending to be a, you know, a good guy, and he was a bad guy the whole time. It's like, it's just something that you didn't predict, but nothing about the storyline changed, and that's what a swerve should really be. It should be a bump, not a complete change of the pattern of where you're going. And that's what I thought was fantastic here. I agree with you. Great angle for something, I mean, so simple, so basic. A guy comes out of the crowd and beats a guy up, right? But
yeah,
it gets you emotionally charged. It gets you invested. And it gets a lot out of something really, really simple. Something that just is like not a lot of writing, not a lot of thinking, didn't take a bunch. You just had a guy show up and beat another guy up.
Yep. Excellent. Then we get Charlie Caruso, and she runs down the Dusty Classic. Now, this is, I like these. I like these little bumper things here. And this leads us into a Tyler Bate explaining that he has an injury angle, a Mustache Mountain, can't be in it. So Roddy Strong begs Regal to get into the tournament. Overall, I liked everything about this stuff here. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I enjoyed it. I like the event center. I've heard some people attacking Tyler Bate for not being very, I guess, charismatic here. I don't know if I 100%...
Is he, you know, that's the thing. Is he charismatic?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a difference. There's a difference. I think he has in-ring charisma.
Right.
But I really don't think he has... It's kind of like the thing, like Roddy Strong a few years ago. And he's gotten better at it now. Like, I thought Roddy never had out-of-ring charisma, but he had an in-ring.
Right.
And I think Tyler Bate, they're completely different in their in-ring charismas, but they both have in-ring charisma, but they don't, they just naturally aren't charismatic outside.
Right, and I can definitely see that, but I think...
As he's not large, he's British, so he's kind of subtle, you know?
Right, but I think if he plays his role here, where he comes across... like just who he is, even if it's not super charismatic. So I thought it was fine. Everything was good, and he was fine. I don't see like a point of picking him apart of being like this big fucking deal that this was not over the top amazing. It was like it was fine for what it was supposed to do.
And he's bowing out anyway. So I mean, do you really want to have this? Do you really want to? You don't want bait out shining his replacements at this point either. So, I mean, he's got to play it low key. And then we get an Undisputed Era promo. And man, this is really feeling like it's aping NWO / Bullet Club. They need to find their own voice. I didn't like this at all. I mean, it wasn't a bad promo or anything, but they need to find their own voice. Well, what did you make of it?
Completely agree. I've been saying it from the start. I think that these guys are just ridiculously NWO knockoff. I mean, people say that about the Bullet Club or said that about the Bullet Club a lot, but I mean, this is just, it's the same exact formula. It's not even like the Bullet Club where it was tongue-in-cheek. It comes across like they're just trying to be the NWO.
Yeah. And then, wow, we get Larkin and Birch versus Roddy Strong and his partner, Pete Dunne. Holy crap. This was one amazing sprint. Just hard-hitting, big moves, total sprint. No clue who was the legal man half the time. I mean, I think this is obscene that we call it a tag match because they're just all of them go, 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 go. But they did follow the almost the bare minimum of tag rules, I guess. But my God, this was just a hoot. What you make of it, man?
Yeah, I fucking loved this. And everyone had their characters and their roles in the team that I thought was great. I mean, very clearly, Roddy is the hothead and, like, very defensive of his partner, which I love that, too, that, like, Roddy is this pit bull or, you know, bulldog or whatever that, like, it doesn't matter that him and Pete Dunne have had a bunch of matches or a few matches at least and aren't necessarily on the same page. As soon as they're on the same team, Roddy is fiercely defensive of him. So, like, anytime shit gets a little bit crazy, Roddy is in the ring, ready to throw down, trying to make sure that nobody's trying to get over on Pete Dunne or anything like that. So I enjoyed that quite a bit. It's raucous with a lot of just nuts stuff going all around. I loved Oney Lorcan as really kind of the heater of his team, even. Just when he gets in there and he gets going, he's just a bat out of fucking hell. His offense is amazing. I liked Birch, you know, taking the heat, selling to set up the hot tags and all that. And I liked Dunn playing the kind of, this actually is working. Like, this worked for me, even if it's not necessarily fitting my character completely. So he isn't, doesn't come across like he's turning babyface as much as he's just like, well, this is convenient, and I can kind of respect that this guy's a badass, and, you know, he watched my back, and maybe I can kind of use this situation to my advantage. So we were kind of wondering because I had heard that this is where it was going. I think we even talked about it. We did say we tried to miss spoilers, but unfortunately, I think this one was one that I was spoiled on.
Yeah, it's more of a, you sometimes run into them. I try not to read them, though, yeah.
Yeah, but so this one I was a little bit spoiled on, and I did kind of wonder, how are they going to make this work?
And they kind of set it up like last week, pretty in your face.
Yeah, they were teasing it. So I did wonder how they're going to make this work, but I thought that they are doing a pretty good job of it. Where it's not feeling like Dunn is completely turning babyface; it's feeling more like Dunn is just in an
matter of respect.
Yeah,
a matter of respect.
And then once it becomes not worth his while to keep Roderick Strong around, he can dump him off. But I wouldn't mind these guys tagging for a while, honestly, because they looked really good together.
Agreed. And then we get a Ricochet vignette, and my God, finally they used the vignettes right. This is how you have Ricochet come in, you show him doing a couple hot moves, and boom, you get people whetting their appetite for Ricochet to make his official debut. Well done, and I just hope we don't have to see the damn vignette after he debuts, but I know we will. Because that's the one, and it's just the one problem with NXT. You don't need to see the damn vignettes after they've debuted. That defeats the purpose. The vignettes are to keep us hyped. They get us ready for the debut, not afterwards. I got enough Street Profit reruns to last me a lifetime. What do you think? They finally got it, nailed it on the head here, right?
Yeah, it's the perfect guy for it, too, because he is just so standout that even in a few second videos and stuff like that, he... he looks like a major star. And I think, yeah, perfect way to do it.
Then we get Ember Moon versus Aaliyah. I understand them why they put Baszler on commentary, but I don't want to say it exposed her, because it's not like she was bad at in the role, and she wasn't trying to provide commentary, but I just didn't feel it felt natural of her just to sit back there and watch the match without attacking. She's the Cobra. She's, you know, it felt a little odd, you know. It didn't suit her character. What you make of everything here?
I actually liked Shayna on commentary here. I can see what you're saying about that. Why would she just sit back? But, I thought that she did a good job, like, of the actual commentary itself, even if maybe that part of it didn't fit her character perfectly. It reminded me somewhat of when Kevin Steen popped in on the commentary, but in a totally different way in NXT, where a lot of times it would start to overshadow the match. I thought that she became the focal point of the match in some ways, but this was a match that it didn't really matter that much, but with a totally different style of charisma, where, you know, Steen was a quippy one-liners and Shayna is just believable ass kicker who you totally buy into. What she's saying is real and legit, which is impressive, because I think that that was the part of her game that people are questioning the most. So I think that's part of it, is just showing off that she can have a conversation that's comes across somewhat off the cuff, but real and staying within character. The match itself, I think, again, does no favors for Moon. I mean, they're really trying to have her be this underdog character, it seems, a lot, in that she even is selling a bunch for Aaliyah here. And then when it comes down to it, most of the time with her, it's like, goddamn, she just does one move and then she wins and that's it. And her offense comes down to just that, that eclipse being basically everything that she has going for her, which I think does not help build her as a champion. So yeah, I think the post-match is probably where the biggest issue comes in, with the talking about, Shayna just standing there and not doing anything, because she's shown so many times how willing she is to jump people. But if you had told me some kind of backstory and shown, like, oh, you know, Regal is telling her that she better knock this stuff off or she's going to start getting in trouble, something, it would make more sense. Because, yeah, it does not make sense that after how much she's been willing to just attack and jump everyone, why she would just stand there post-match and not do anything. But the actual commentary part and during the match I thought was actually pretty good, because she played her role really well and came across natural and believable as an ass-kicker still on commentary.
And then we get CM Almas ambushing Mendoza, and he starts cutting a promo. Man, I think Zelina needs to be cutting his promos for him. He seemed confused, because I know he wasn't, but he just seemed like a little lost or something. I'm not sure. What you make of this?
Yeah, there's no reason for him to be trying to speak English. His accent is very thick here. And while he does have, maybe I'll try to coin this term and see if it takes off, but he does have the dime piece mouthpiece there, as Zelina Vega is looking phenomenal in her crazy-ass outfit, who should be doing the talking for him. But instead, she just stands there as he muddles his way through a mix of Spanish and English to a point that I think confused almost everyone.
Yeah.
I heard a lot of people who weren't even sure what language he was speaking, which is not necessarily great.
Yeah, because he's screaming and he just seemed out of control. Then we get Lars Sullivan vignette. You know what? I like this because we haven't seen Lars in a while, and it just kind of throws a little refresher on who and what he's about. Did it work for you?
Yeah, and it's remixed with some more recent stuff and some of the older stuff from the vignettes that they showed for him. It's a return hype package, which I like, because as it watched, I was like, God, if they're showing this video, he better be coming back soon. I don't want to just, you know, weeks and weeks of this. Luckily, at the end, it says he's back next week, so thank God this is going to hopefully be it.
Yeah, he's going to be in that five-way.
And the other part of it is that the guy fucking stands out for me with his look, and the music fits perfectly, so that's also helps to make the whole thing work.
Did you see that on Twitter, him lifting that barbell with one arm?
No, what happened?
He's lifting weights in like a sitting position with one arm, like a whole body, like a whole
like a whole like bench press bar?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Absolutely nuts.
The guy is fucking crazy. Yeah.
Nuts. Oh, and then Regal has a big announcement next week. I mean, since they spoiled the card for NXT, I know what it is, but I'm assuming that's what it is. But man, Regal is putting this thing over big as the big, huge announcement. It makes you pumped just to hear what it is, though. But it's not gonna. I mean, knowing what it is, it really doesn't like. Oh wow, great one, you know.
Yeah.
But hey, and then we get Adam Cole versus Cassius Ohno. Man, talk about this match. Easily, I think Adam Cole's best match in NXT.
One quick thing that there was a mention of. Aleister Black is going to be on next week or something. And just a real Morrow mentioned, I think maybe it's the new nickname, but they're calling Aleister Black the Striking Man. And I simultaneously kind of like and hate that nickname because I get what they're trying to do, but it just comes across a little bit too clever. But it's WWE branding, so you got to have nicknames, yeah. Right? But yeah, yep. The Striking Man. I was just like, oh, God.
Pass.
Yeah, so the match. Ohno showing off his technical skills to begin. It's Cole trying to kind of stop from getting ragdolled around. I love the big boot that Ohno hits, just taking Adam Cole out of the sky mid-leapfrog. The selling on the floor of the leg I thought was really good for Cole with the sneakiness. Hits the enziguri. I don't understand the Kaiser Soze reference. I think I missed what that was supposed to be for Morrow. My only issue is that the end, I thought was... I don't want to be a dick. It was good, and like I get you that it was a good showing from Cole here match-wise, but it felt like a toned-down version of those kind of ruthless ROH finishes that I talked about before. One that always stood out for me that we reviewed on the show was the match with Adam Cole versus Stevie Richards. I think it was just on ROH TV, where Adam Cole has these finishes that come across like he's inflicting insane amounts of like concussive damage and just being super ruthless. And this felt like it was trying to kind of mirror those, but it was, like I said, it just felt more toned down, and it didn't have that same level of kind of killer instinct deadliness that he was showing as ROH champion. But if he builds upon this and starts to, you know, kind of take it up to the next level as he has bigger and more important matches, then this is a positive, obviously. This is a step in the right direction. But still, it feels kind of like Adam Cole is just, unfortunately, he was a guy that they signed too late. And I think everyone was saying it. I think everyone was talking about why haven't they signed this guy? They're obviously going to sign him. They should sign him soon. They take forever. They took forever. And then finally they sign him. And now it feels like it might be too late. And the time has passed. And kind of what was making him stand out for a long time is just not quite there anymore. So we will see how he continues, because like I said, this felt like a step in the right direction from Adam Cole, but I need to see.
And it's
more.
Not helping that they have him doing NWO Bullet Club parodies, you know, interviews.
Right.
So that's one of the things that him stood out in Ring of Honor, that he was a good guy on the stick, and we don't get a chance to really see it there. And we see it, but all you see is NWO wannabe. You're midget NWO guy.
Yeah, exactly. So
you're 190 pound, you know. You're not Hulk Hogan. You're not Kevin Nash, you know.
Yeah. So hopefully they can continue and on this way and build something here with him, but we'll just have to see. And like you said, this was a great showing, but it's also against Cassius Ohno, which is, you know, it's kind of hard to have a bad match with. And it still was not like, oh my God, eye opening. I think Adam Cole still has it. Performance,
right?
So, yeah.
I think Ohno needs to start wearing pants in the ring, because I understand what the glandular thing, but those the outfits they're doing for him aren't doing him any good, you know.
Yeah, I almost less care about the top. They make him wear the shirt, but I think that doesn't look as bad. And unfortunately, I'll call it out, which I think you're trying to say, is he's got a little bit of cottage cheese in the thighs.
Yeah.
And it shows, so he would be better off wearing pants than wearing a shirt. But for some reason, I think because it's a cosmetic business, and it's an upper body business, as they say in wrestling. So that's the thing that they're more worried about. And realistically, I think his upper body doesn't necessarily look as bad or look as out of shape or as not.
I think he looks more out of shape wearing a tight shirt, tell you the truth.
Right, exactly. Than just wearing, just having nothing up there. So
yeah,
we'll see what they do. I mean, obviously, it'll be weird if they put him in a full ass bodysuit. That's not necessarily what I would.
That's not what I'm saying. Yeah, rather see him shirtless with just some wearing a long tights as opposed to short tights.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would. I agree with you that I think that would look better. I just worry that their solution would actually be just to put him, you know, in a full
in
bodysuit.
A giant Gonzalez outfit.
Yeah, exactly. That's the next. You know,
I thought we got good wrestling here. You know, nothing, you know, the matches weren't like 5 stars, but they were all really good, especially the Ono Cole and the tag match. And that Gargano angle was incredible. So I thought this was really good, and I'm hyped to see Ricochet debut.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much the entire sentiment there. I'm excited for Ricochet. I'm excited for the return of Lars Sullivan. So yeah, there's good solid wrestling here, nothing amazing, but it was kind of a down week for wrestling wise. The only thing that really stood out was that tag match as being just an absolute corker for what it was, but everything else was serving its purpose.
And so that leads us over to the Black Label Pro, and we're on Powerbomb TV here, powerbombtv.com, and you have so much options here to watch, and we decided to watch Black Label Pro. We're not the Mountie, and because of Pierre, the Quebeca wrestling Walter at Janela Spring Break. Before we get into the show, did you see on Twitter Quebeca Pierre's response to Walter?
No, I did not.
He, I don't know where it comes from, but he grabbed a deck of cards and ripped them in half.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, it took him a while, but it's pretty. I'm like, holy shit, that's impressive.
Showing off that grip strength, buddy. He's going to have a shot battle.
I'm telling you, man, he's coming to play. We opened up here with Dasher Hatfield. Who else is in this thing? Gringo Loco, Jake Parnell, there's one other guy who's in here.
Marcus Crane.
I thought it was a fun opener, 2.5 stars. It was just what it needed to do, entertaining to open up the show. Well, what'd you make of it?
Agreed. Jake Parnell stood out as the best guy in the match, I think. Dasher is on his winning streak kind of thing that they're doing with him. So, you know, he gets the win, but I thought all in all, just a good, solid opening match. I gave it 2.5 stars, and I thought that, it had some good spots. Everyone had a unique character, and they stood out with their own gimmick. And Black Label Pro, this is why Black Label Pro works, is that they mix all of these unique gimmicks all together when a lot of these guys don't kind of interact with each other anywhere else.
Yeah, and they're like the ultimate blender. Then we got Rory Gulak versus Kobe Durst. What you make of it, man?
Damn, like, Kobe had bulked up, but now it looks like he's cut. And the guy is a really perfect mix of his old self when he was really, really tiny and lean. And then the recent self where he was a little bit chunky. Now he's nice in between. He looks good. Looks like an athlete. Looks like a blue chipper, honestly, to me. He's coming into his own body. He's kind of, you know, obviously his face has not matured too much, but he's even there a little bit. He's starting to look more like a man. So I'm into that. I like Rory. He knows all these counter tricks. And is kind of playing that off while Cody is the blue chipper, young stud athlete who's gonna show off what he can do. I really thought that one thing that was super funny from this commentary, and the commentary team for Black Label Pro is pretty easily picked up on, not Greg Irons actually, but the other guy. I don't even know his name, and I feel kind of bad for that. I'm sorry. But he gets a little tongue-tied and says some stuff or some things that come across not thinking. There's a counter that Rory does into a Tilt-A-Whirl backbreaker, and the commentary says, "Nothing fancy about that." And I'm like, Tilt-A-Whirl backbreaker, not fancy. Okay. I mean, I understand that in 2018, like, wrestling is over the top, but still, like, a Tilt-A-Whirl is kind of fancy, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so from there, though, I think that you were telling a good story, but then it completely switches, and then now Rory is being cocky and getting distracted and making mistakes, and I was just like, I wish, because I thought that Cody did a good job sticking with his character and the story that he's telling, but I felt like Rory switched characters, and showing that lack of commitment to the story and the character hurt the match for me, that he went from the vet with the cool tricks to then being the cocky guy who was able to be caught off guard because he wasn't paying attention, just didn't make sense to me. But I still gave the match 2.75 stars. I thought strong showing from Cody, and I thought Rory was good. I just wish that he had picked a character and stuck with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes very good sense. I give it 2.5. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good hard-hitting match. And I kind of like that first targeting in the back, but it kind of gets away. Overall, good, solid stuff. That leaves Ethan Page versus Quebec Pierre. I didn't have any expectations coming in. I haven't watched any Pierre since probably 98 or something, 97. And we see Pierre opens up working the arm with a Kimura, and I had no idea what I was watching here. Liked Pierre's mat work, and especially targeting the arm. Then you see the guy bust out a big tope, and we're getting some fun brawling from this match. Super fun match. Give it 3.25 stars. I don't even know if Ethan Page knew what the fuck to expect. Because I bet it felt like he was getting shoot on. He's probably getting shot on by Pierre the whole match. This is great. And I can't wait to see him in New Orleans, man. Long live the Quebecers. Vive la France. What did you make of this?
Yeah, this was the main event. And to be, you know, perfectly honest, this was like why we picked this show was for this match. And I had heard about it on the Bitter Boys Club podcast, Ethan Page's podcast, talking about this match and what to expect or what like kind of happened here. And it definitely was not what I would have predicted. It was super cool, all the action that Pierre did, and like you talk about breaking out the guardrails and just like going to town with the just brawling around the building. Great mix, I thought, of the kind of having a shoot style, wild spots, brawling. Pierre looked really good until towards the end, which does make me question a little bit how WrestleMania weekend's going to go for the boy. Hopefully he's not working too many matches, because, I mean, he looked fine at hitting his spots and hitting his moves throughout, but towards the end he was getting a little bit of that Tim Storm walking zombie stiffness to himself, where it was like, oh man, he is probably hurting right now. But, you know, he did not stop, and he kept going, and he was still, you know, didn't look dangerous, just looked like he's got to be stiff and hurting. But a good match, a crazy package pile driver finish. From the guy off the pop-up powerbomb, so really doing the double Kevin Steen work, and then going all the way up to the top for the Swanton Bomb.
He's out-Steening Owens.
Yeah, exactly. He's the father of Kevin Steen, because I think Steen was originally trained by Rougeau, so I would assume that Pierre has some familiarity with him. I gave it the same as you, 3.25, loved it, fucking nutty match, just a lot of fun, and Pierre is, definitely a guy to keep an eye on WrestleMania weekend, just maybe catch his earlier matches and not the stuff that's going on late Saturday night.
All right, and then we get a Brian Pillman Jr., or the second, I hate referring to him as the second, versus Joey Janela. I haven't seen Pillman. I wanted to see him. I was a fan of his father's. What you think here, man?
I mean, he is playing it up. He's got the mullet. He's got the chin strap beard. He's trying to look like his young version of his father.
They say it's like only his like fourth match, really?
Yeah, and he's got the same gear. I don't know if it's the exact same gear, if it's just a reproduction of the gear that his brother or his father started wearing very early on in his career, but look damn good. not, you know, obviously not quite the same physique as his pops, but maybe that's just because of the limited amount of wellness-related medications he's able to take.
Right, yeah.
But he definitely still looks good. I guess I would actually assume that wrestling has just shrunk because he looks a lot bigger than his dad did, but that's also because his dad used to have to wrestle guys probably twice the size as Joey Janela. Like, he comes across to me like a little bit like a Peter Casa. He's got a nice mix of being able to fly and having power, but he's a little bit taller. So, you know, he can fit that kind of role. I thought he did good here playing underdog babyface. Bumped and sold well. I talked about Janela's match last night with Ray Horace not being a fit. I thought this was a good fit for Joey. Joey can work heel, and even with how over he is, I think he can still get sympathy and some heat. I think he does get a good amount of people who are playing along, but he also, I think, can get some decent emotion to where the crowd gets into it. I thought the crowd was into Pillman by the finish. And I was a big fan. I thought that Pillman's selling was not super, super dynamic, and he could definitely work on that, but he did get the crowd into him fighting back. The figure four, the long figure four spot where Pillman wouldn't grab the ropes was weird, where he's trying to roll into it. But I guess it's kind of an old school baby face thing. He doesn't want to use the ropes. So I can buy into it, but it, you know, unfortunately in 2018, it doesn't quite work the way that it used to. He gets the win with that German suplex, his bridge. I don't know if it was just the size of his opponent or if it's just that he's still young, but his bridge was a little awkward with his feet not planted as well as they could be. But I gave the match 3 stars. I thought that they did a really good job of both guys playing up their characters and having a pretty solid heel and face dynamic, even with a guy who's super over and a guy who's unknown, which is tough because I think, you know, people talk about it. It's like being a babyface is really hard, especially when people don't know you and they have no familiarity with you. Getting the crowd to actually want to support you is really, really tough. And actually, it's a lot of guys say it's a lot easier to be a heel than it is to be a babyface. And I think that Pillman did a good job here. And you have to give some credit to Janela playing the heel to help get Pillman over here. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the match.
Which is funny because most people don't even want to play heel because they lose money.
Right.
But I didn't like it as much as you. I gave it 1 star and 3/4. I thought Pillman was really green here. You could tell Janela was running him through the hoops here. I understand that. I mean, he's really, he's young. His timing seemed off in some spots. The finish with the German, his secret German suplex, it didn't seem like a real finish. Because we've seen people kick out of a hell of a lot more stuff than that. Which it would have worked maybe in 1989 when his dad worked. It just doesn't work now. I liked Pillman. I liked how he showed good fire as a babyface. He just needs to, it's kind of like Tempo in a way, where he needs to learn, get a couple token moves under his belt so he has some go-to stuff. Right now he doesn't have that. I kind of dug it. I don't know if he meant to do it on purpose, but I like Janela came out as it looked like a member of Bad Company, which was Brian Pillman's tag team with Bruce Hart and Stampede. So that's what I'm looking at Janela going. He looks like he's the honorary third member of Bad Company, and he's working Brian Pillman Jr. Pretty cool. I thought they did well when they striked. I thought it was a strike heavy match, and that's smart. You're working but I think it would have been smarter to work some more holds with Pillman and really work him underneath and let the selling, because he had good fire. So I think if we had him working holds on Pillman, I think it would have worked better and got him over more as a babyface than the strike heaviness that we got here. But I thought Pillman has a good upside. And Janela is a really good worker. I don't consider Janela an elite worker. I think he's a really good one. And I felt if he was elite, and then again, he thought it was a good match, which is fine. I just think if he was the elite level, he would have gotten Pillman to that next level in this match. But Pillman has, again, a lot of upside, but he needs time. And that's so rough now with everything being taped and stuff, man. Yeah, everyone's going to see all your warts and boogers right before you get rid of your cold and you get rid of puberty stuff. So that leads us to Dick Justice and Space Monkey versus the Carnies. I love how the Carnies can, you know, they can work a real team. Like, you know, they can have a serious match, like with the Ducklings or whoever. Or they can flip a switch and just do a comedy match, which is, it has its spots on cards. I love the Carnies setup for the cheap heat here. I thought this was fun for what it was. And I will say, Nick Iggy's bump off the Kid Stunner was freaking, either you're going to love it or you're going to hate it. I think I loved it because for what they're doing here. If now the Carnies were working the main event and then he took the Stunner from a Kid, I'd be like, okay, that's stupid. Here, that's their goal, was to have fun and do a comedy match and get the crowd into it, just based on funness. So him taking an over-the-top rope Stunner from a Kid might have been 6 years old, and he did everything for him. I fall under the fun part. I didn't rate it because it was just straight up, you know, comedy type of stuff. But I enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it a 2.5, and I'm with you. Lots of fun. I think the Carnies are a really great utility team. Not even utility, but like...
Well, you can put them anywhere on the card. Yeah. You can have a main event in a street brawl. Or you can have them go do Gaga and have fun. Do a Memphis walk and talk, fun, you know, spirited comedy match.
Or you can have them do the opening Young Bucks, you know, card crazy spot fest match. They can do it all, yeah. Really. So, yeah, they're versatile. That was the word I was looking for.
Yep.
They're a very versatile team, and they did a good job here. Space Monkey and Dick Justice are just a lot of fun, and the crowd gets into them. So yeah, the gunplay and everything else, it's just goofiness, but it's fun and it works.
Yeah, I mean, again, I wasn't a fan of the gun spot. And especially, I think of the spot, like I've seen Sammy Guevara use it, like Shooty Kai. I think now, I mean, maybe I'm being oversensitive, but with all the shootings, I feel like it's almost like a spot that needs to go away for a while, since we've had all these damn mass shootings. I might be a little oversensitive on it. I mean, it's not something that's stopping me from watching wrestling or anything, but I think it's one of those things that people should sometimes think a little harder on when they're doing it, you know?
Yeah, that's, I can definitely see that.
I can tell, yeah. I mean, I'm not totally offended by it or anything, but I can see somebody, if I was in one of those shootings and I went to go to wrestling as a relief, to release myself, and then I'm seeing people pretend to shoot each other. I think I could have a problem with it.
For sure.
Then we got Tom Lawler versus Jonathan Gresham, the Octopus. What'd you make of this, man?
Loved it. Loved the grappling back and forth. Loved the action between the two, the interplay with the different holds. Love Grisham working kind of that World of Sport pro style. Tom Lawler is, you know, he's a good pro wrestler. He's also a very, you know, accomplished MMA fighter, so he's got that grappling side too that he plays up a lot more here. So they kind of have counter styles, but they're very similar as well. Both doing some really nasty arm work. Grisham was really turning it up here. I love when Grisham feels like he's come to play with someone that he can have a lot of fun with, because he brings out stuff that you don't see him doing all the time with people who can keep up, which he does here, stuff that you don't see often or stuff that you see so rarely or even feel like you're seeing it for the first time that he's doing, because it's you know, so rare. Weird little intricate details and kind of changeovers from position to position, just nice. Loved the airplane spinning face lock from Tom, using his power and size to try to choke Grisham out. Loved Grisham almost going out, fighting from underneath. I thought a lot of Grisham's underdog selling here was done really well. I can understand that they're a little bit more serious, and they played it off a little bit that there was a heel and face dynamic here. Unfortunately, I think it hurt. It didn't hurt, but I think it was a letdown for me, because I've liked Tom Lawler a lot here in Black Label Pro, especially being a very solid heel. And being very, very heelish, and I felt that here he toned down the heelness to kind of have more of a technical showcase masterpiece, kind of show off what we can do match, a little bit more of that Japanese style of unclear, you know, there's not a big time over the top babyface heel, and I get it, but it feels like a stark contrast from a lot of what he's been doing in Black Label Pro. So I understand why you would want to do that, but it doesn't make sense to me without an angle or a promo setting it up, at least talking about how, you know, Tom Lawler really looks forward to this matchup, looks up to, respects Grisham to the point where he wants to have a pretty much clean matchup and just have it be about the wrestling and the grappling. Because, I mean, why wouldn't he take some of the shortcuts and be the asshole that he's been for the most part? That said, like I said, another issue I had with it early on is Grisham really attacking Tom Lawler's corner man, and Tom's just watching, and then a few seconds later, the guy's giving Tom a drink, and I'm just kind of like, shouldn't he be selling? Like, shouldn't this guy be selling his ass off for getting attacked by Grisham here? It felt like it really kind of hurt Grisham's offense a little bit that he attacks the corner man and the guy doesn't really sell it at all. So I kind of did not like that. But yeah, I really enjoyed the match through and through. I thought that both guys really were just showing off some, like, fucking top-level grappling. I mean, these guys are so good, and it came across like a real struggle all the way through. Sick, nasty arm work. They carried the time well. I think the match went pretty long, but did not feel like it overstayed the welcome. I was really enjoying it the whole way through, and I do enjoy, again, Tom Lawler gets the win using his size and strength to his advantage and winning with a pro-style move with the kind of Styles Clash counter of the Octopus to get the win. I gave it 3.5 stars, really liked it, but like I said, I kind of pointed out the little minute details that I had with it, but all in all, it was a very enjoyable match.
Yeah, I went 3 3/4 on it, and I thought they had a really good feeling out process. I like Gresham on the arm early, and then Lawler returns the favor. There's a lot of counters of counters here, because again, they're trying to feel each other out. Corner guy, can hold and get to the advantage for Lawler. Gresham starts transmissions from the arm to start working the back. Lawler gets a choke and Gresham gets the ropes immediately. I love that spot. Gresham back to the arm. It really picks up the second half of the match, and we get heat and shine segments. The cutoffs were really good, and yeah, I thought it was really well worked, and I can totally see on where everything you had some of those complaints on. The corner was the thing that didn't bother me because I'm just used to just shitty corner men not selling shit, so it didn't really totally bother me so much. But yeah, but when I think down to it, it really probably should have. That leads us to the Rumble. You know, I'm always a fan of these type of things. I think it's cool to do. It's an easy match to do that gets the crowd to interact with the match, and they pop and get happy on the certain spots, and it's easy to manipulate the crowd. I thought they did a good, solid job here. I didn't rate it, but I thought they did a good job here. What about you?
Yeah, I think that they did a good job having a narrative with the eyepoke guys, even if it was a little goofy, that at least was something that was going on throughout the match. I thought there was a lot of people who got some shine in here and looked good. I thought, there was a lot going on. There was a good mix. I felt like there were some points where the ring got a little filled, played off with some monsters who got to clear the ring, stuff like that. All in all, like I said, good action. I think I agree with you. Let me see if I even rated it. Yeah, I gave it 3.25. I thought it was pretty good for what it was. I think that there was a lot of cool character points and stuff like that. And I found the final four to be interesting. I kind of liked the breakdown. I thought that Jordynne Grace did really well playing her role. I think that Jordynne Grace is always pretty good at what she does, as kind of exuding some badassery. As just a big buff chick. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Cool. Overall, the show was really good. We got a lot of good wrestling on this show, and Black Label Pro is a promotion really to me people need to check out. You get a meshing, get this like meshing pot or crock pot of greatness and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed it. I guess on that note, we'll head on out of here. Anything you gotta talk about, Tim? WXW stuff you want to plug?
Yeah, check out the WXW show with me, Quentin, and Brock. It's broken into two parts. So if you're really hardcore, you can listen to both. If you're a little bit less so, you can listen to just the actual 16 Karat weekend reviews. And the second part is Ambition and Inner Circle, so the kind of ancillary shows. I recommend listening to the Ambition and Inner Circle breakdown as well, just because there's a lot of cool stuff there. Towards the end of the 16 Karat, we kind of get pretty introspective about the company as a whole. It's definitely cool. I saw someone post on the social media, specifically on the Facebook, that too many of the podcasters on PW get along too much and it makes for bad radio or something like that, that we should all be fighting with each other. We don't necessarily get into any fights, but we definitely have some disagreements but we have some fun, and I think we're all civil. So I don't know, Pete, maybe next time, me and you need to start getting in more fights here on the show. Maybe that'll liven it up for people. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, the other thing that people might forget, we're adults, and we handle things like adults should.
Right.
And when we disagree, we make our case, and we move on. I have the last thing I need to do. I don't need to feel like I don't need to prove I'm the smartest guy in the room, or I don't want to do a show with somebody who has that need to prove that the smartest guy in the room. It's like, you make your case, you move on. If we wanted to fight on every minutia and stuff, we'd end up having 8-hour shows.
And
I have much too much going on in my life. I watch wrestling. I watch wrestling on. I watch stuff I like. So that has something also to do with it. You know, I very rarely am I watching something I have a lot of venom for. I don't watch stuff that just doesn't really appeal to me. So you're gonna get positive reviews on stuff for the most part.
Yep, that's about it. So just enjoy listening to that one, and should have a new episode of Lucha Undead coming out. I guess I missed an episode there. I feel really bad. I had an episode unfortunately get deleted that when it shouldn't have. So kind of missed that. It's kind of sucks, but I'll talk about it on there, so just listen to those, and follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Cool, and the Place B Nation is having their, usually we do a tailgate before Mania, but this year we rented out a bar in Louisiana called Cajuns. So if anyone's interested in going, who's a follower of this show, I mean, hit me up on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. I'll pass on all the deets on what it all takes for you to come on. And we'll have a lot of fun. Supposedly there's a karaoke bar. It's a karaoke bar. I'm not a karaoker, or is that even a word? I don't know. but I know I hear JT can hit quite the tune. So come out, support it, have fun. We'll have some drinks, some food before Mania. And swap stories and whatever else you guys want to hear. So if you're interested, just reach out to me on social media, and I'll get you all the details, man. And again, remember, Wednesdays is always WorldCast Wednesday. And see you later. Have a great week.
We're not the Mounties. We're handsome. We're brave. We're strong. We're not the Mounties, 'cause we enforce the law. You can try to run, but you can never hide. Unlike the Mounties, we always get our man. We're not the Mounties, we're handsome, we're brave, we're strong. We're not the Mounties, 'cause we enforce the law. You can try to run.